George visited the fiction workshop today and told us that he was a little bit like a mule and that he would wait for about 20 years to kick somebody if they pissed him off. So I really hope I don't screw the pooch on this.
I don't think I'll live another 20 years.
Great. Okay. George lives in the same world as you and I. His is just a little stranger. It's a place where visits to the veterinarian can lead to bad dates at a bar. A septic tank cleaning can break up a marriage. Dog companionship might be a better option in the long run to marriage, in fact. And This Itches, Y'all, is the takeaway wisdom from an educational documentary about head lice. His are not straight stories. But as you read the bizarre and the hilarious and the unbelievable, you'll come across these one-liners that are surprisingly true. All political signs do obstruct someone's view. We probably all should live in houses connected to city sewers, and lice really does itch, y'all. So maybe it's not that Singleton's world is stranger than ours. Maybe he just has better eyes, less time with people, and more time with dogs. He is the author of 2 novels and now 6 collections of short stories, which you can, 2 of which you can buy at the table. He is a former Guggenheim Fellow, the winner of the Hillsdale Award for Fiction, and a finalist for the 2013 CBA Book Award. His work has been published in Harper's Magazine, Atlantic Monthly, and Playboy. He also has a long career as a teacher at the South Carolina Governor's School for the Arts and Humanities, and now at Wofford College in Spartanburg, South Carolina. Ladies and gentlemen, George Singleton.
Thank you, Maggie, from Chattanooga. I'm going to talk a little bit. Can y'all hear me? I'm kind of loud. Okay. Back in about, let's say, 2005, I had this book coming out called Work Shirts for Mad Men. I think it came out in 2006. In 2005, I got the hard copy of it marked up by a copy editor. My copy editor, David Huff, a great man who'd done other work for 2 other books, said, and he talks exactly like this, "George, my mother's sick in Minnesota. I got to go tend to her, so I'm going to subcontract the book out with a woman who's 80 years old that used to work at the New Yorker." I said, of course, "I hope your mother's okay, because that's how we are in South Carolina." So I got the book. This is God, things have happened so fast. I mean, it's before that track crap that I really despise. You know, that track editing stuff that I just can't figure out. So I got it, and I mean, that thing was marked up. Believe it or not, I love editors. I think editors and writers are trying to make the best product. They don't want to mess you up. Why would they want to put out a bad book out on the market? This thing was really marked up. The novel, Work Shirts of Mad Men, is a first-person narrative by a guy, kind of like all my narrators, just kind of normal old guy, right? Not a rocket scientist, but not, you know, South Carolina dumb. So this New York, 80-year-old New Yorker, ex-New Yorker copy editor had marked a lot of things. So if my character said, in dialogue, "I ain't got no money," she changed it to, "I do not have any money." You know, my characters wouldn't talk like that, so I wrote "stet" off to the side. And then she was really taken with how I speak, which is I would have sentences like, "I only want to go home and take a nap." And she changed that to, "I want only to go home and take a nap." And I wrote "stet" off to the side. And then, you know, "I only want to beat the crap out of that guy and drive off to another state." "I want only to beat the crap out of that guy." And finally, on the third one, whatever it was, she wrote off to the sideline, on the margin, she wrote, "Do you people in the South not know this rule of grammar?" That pissed me off a little bit, right? So the fourth time she did this only thing, I wrote, "I want only to kill you." And I mailed the thing back, and I had stet. I had stet like 180 times. Stet means let it stand in editor talk, right? Just don't mess with me. And normally I don't use this thing. You know, normally an editor's right, but when you're dealing with the voice of the character, and I wouldn't want to make this some rocket scientist guy living in a town of 2, by the way. So anyway, I sent it back to David Huff. He called me up and he said, "I had a funny feeling that little experiment wasn't going to work. I've fixed all your steps." Now, because I live in South Carolina, at the time I live in a little town called Dacusville, population 600. A little aside on that, when I first moved there, one time I was at the little Texaco station. There's not even an intersection in Dacusville. There's a T, and there's a Texaco station convenience store, and I was there inside one day.
and a guy drove up with a horse trailer. In the back of the horse trailer were llamas. There were some kind of new South entrepreneurs going on around here. And I was inside with, 12-pack of beer, and this guy in front of me was about twice my size, big old gut, no shirt, no shoes. That law doesn't work in South Carolina. And he was looking out of that horse trailer, and he turned to me and he said, "What the hell kind of donkeys is them?" Yeah, baby. I got to go home and write. So anyway, that's, where I was living, Dacusville, South Carolina, where I didn't have much to do except think up little tricks for myself in writing. So I thought, you know what I'm going to do after this woman? I'm going to write a bunch of stories, and I'm going to write, the main character in these stories is going to be named Stet, just to mess with editors and copy editors, so when they come across it and it says Stet, they won't know if that means let it stand or if I'm talking about the character, right? So I wrote a slew of these stories back in about 2007 through 9 or so, 6 through 9, whatever. I wrote a bunch, probably wrote 50 of them. 35 of them got published. I got them. Now, half of them were Stet Looper, this guy who was studying. He had a River Rock business, family River Rock business, but he wanted to go get a low residency master's degree in Southern Culture Studies down at this place, a little satellite campus of Ole Miss called in Taylor, Mississippi, so it's called Ole Miss Taylor. Don't think about Aunt B. Okay, so then there was that. And then the other half of the book was he was just going to be a minor character showing up or an antagonist. So it's the first half of the book, in my mind, is going to be Stet Looper telling stories about going out trying to finish up his, work in Southern Culture Studies. Second half would be other people and Stet Looper just kind of walking in on it and kind of bumbling into what would make a good Southern Culture Studies thesis, right? Finish the book. 430 pages. I sent off to my longtime agent, and she said, "George, no one is going to publish a 450-page book of short stories by you." And then she said, "I don't even want to deal with your short stories anymore, not until you write a novel that I like." And I said, "Well, you never really liked anything I've written, Liz." And she was silent on the other end, which is not a good sign, right? So I said, "Okie dokie." Then she said, "I don't know if you people in the South have heard, but we're going through some strange times in publishing." And I said, "We haven't gotten that smoke signal yet." And then she said, "I don't know if you've heard, but the economy," and this is like 2009 or 10, so, all the real estate markets, everything's going down, blah, blah, blah. "And they don't know how many books to publish because of e-books." And she went on and on. I said, "Okay." And I waited a couple days, and then I wrote her an email just kind of breaking up with her. I said, I'm not even sure I need an agent, to be quite honest, and I want to write short stories, so it's been a lovely relationship. Goodbye. And she wrote back and said, "I wish you nothing but success." Yeah, right, bitch. So I got a new agent pretty much, within a week, a woman named Kit Ward. It's not going to be a great story. She said, "George, write what you want. There's no way to second-guess publishing. Send me those stories." So I sent her 450 pages, and she said, "Oh, I love these stories. They're great. They're great. But listen, no one is ever going to publish a 450-page book of stories." I went, "Daggummit." And she said, "I'm going to cut them in half. You got a bunch of dog stories. That's one. And then you got these others." And I said, "Okie dokie." And she said, so she sent it to Harcourt was my, but Harcourt had by this point been bought out by Houghton Mifflin. My cheerleaders were gone out of there. And all these other things. They said, "We'll publish some stories by Singleton if he writes a novel, whatever." And I said, I can't promise. I don't like to do it, and I just don't want to do it. So no. And I said, "Send it to DeZank, this little place, in Michigan, in Ann Arbor, some people here from Michigan." And they said, "Yeah, we'd love to do it." Okay, so this book was supposed to be this thick, one book, right? But it got cut in half. At the end of, so now Stet Looper, some of these stories in the first book are told from Stet Looper's point of view. Some he's a minor character. Some other stories got thrown in between, especially in this book. So it kind of screwed up my whole plan. And then this book has a long novella at the end that's all acknowledgments. Do you know how, you notice a lot now by, thank God, Glenn, you didn't do it, but some younger writers, their book is about that thick, and then there's "I would like to thank my mechanic for fixing my Volvo, which meant I could drive to the post office to mail off my, whatever." They spent all that time on acknowledgments, so I wrote a novella that's all acknowledgments, which kind of wraps up all the Stet Looper stories, because he's thanking people that people have read in the other stories. That makes some sense? Okay, that's kind of what I want to talk about. In case you're reading and go, these are stupid. Well, I understand that. Okay, I'm going to read the first story that comes out in here, which would have been probably about the 10th story if it were the way I wanted it to be. It's okay, does anybody have any questions so far? All right. Vaccination. Oh, well, first of all, I love Morgantown. I got to walk around a bunch. I had some kind of Old Faithful geyser shoot up in the air behind me this morning when I was taking a picture of the river and made me crap my pants. It's pretty. A little bit too hilly for my, you know, because I smoke too much, but it's beautiful, and everybody's really nice and friendly, and thank you so much. I really love being here, Glenn. Thank you. I'm about to cry. Okay. Somebody snorted. This is called vaccination. My dog, Tapeworm Johnson, needed legitimate veterinary attention. It had been 2 years since she received annual shots. I read somewhere that an older dog can overdose on all these vaccinations, and I have found, I share this information with every dog owner I meet, that if you keep your pet away from rabid foxes, raccoons, skunks, bats, and people whose eyes rotate crazy in their sockets, then the chances of your own dog foaming at the mouth diminish drastically. I also believe that dogs don't need microchips embedded beneath their shoulder blades if you keep the dog leashed or in the house or with the truck windows rolled up when you drive around showing the dog farm animals living in pastures. I brought this up to Dr. Page one time, back 4 years earlier when Tapeworm Johnson was somewhere between 8 and 9 years old. Tapeworm had showed up at my door one morning back when I was married and living in a regular house, her ribs as visible as anything you'd order down at Clem and Lida's barbecue shack off Scenic Highway 11, her paw pad split open from, I assumed, days traveling from wherever her conscienceless owner dropped her off. Bless you. Tapeworm looked coon or bird dog mostly, though she'd never pointed over the years I've known her, which might explain a stupid hunter letting her loose without a collar and so on. Seeing as nothing seemed hopeful in the marriage, I let the dog inside, took her to Dr. Page's ex-colleague, Dr. Lloyd Leck, who overdosed on horse tranquilizers a while back, though people in the community say there were only ostrich tranquilizers, seeing as Dr. Leck dealt with the more entrepreneurial ranchers who'd moved in to raise emus, llamas, and the like. Dr. Leck said the dog had tapeworms. When I had signed in, I put Jane Doe down for Tapeworm Johnson's name. When we scheduled a second visit for a month later so the dog could put on weight and get vaccinated for diseases, I felt sure got made up by either the American Veterinary Association or the dog pill and serum manufacturers of the United States. I told the vet to put down Tapeworm for a name. What the hell? There are worse possible names. The dog could have been diagnosed with some kind of block urethra or mange. I have a medical doctor I call Bob. I have an ophthalmologist I call Henry. There's a chiropractor who lives a mile down the road from me in one of those fake log houses built from a kit. I call him Snap Crackle Pop when I come across him at the barbecue shack. I refer to professors as teachers, which seems to piss them off. Okay, I'm going to have to stop for a second. Remember where I'm from, South Carolina. I went to this college called Furman. So did this governor of South Carolina named Mark Sanford. He was there at the same time. He later took a little walk on the Appalachian Trail, remember, but he was really in Argentina and all that stuff. Okay. I went to college with our governor, and I call him Fuck Twig now, just as I did back then. So in case anyone thinks I disparage veterinarians who have to know all the bones of about every animal ever invented, not just the 206 of humans, understand that I called Dr. Page Dr. Page, and before he couldn't take it anymore and offed himself with giant bird tranquilizers, I called Dr. Leck Dr. Leck. Tapeworm got out of my truck without any aid, and she led me to the clinic's door. One woman sat in the waiting room. She said, "Look, Loretta, you have a friend. Look at the pretty doggy," in a high-pitched voice normally used by mothers talking to nonverbal babies or school nurses to special ed first graders who shit their pants and wish that they hadn't. We have a lot of problems these days, and I think that making it a felony to speak in such a manner might eradicate gun violence in the future. When I signed in, I looked down to read Holly for the owner's name and Loretta for her dog. Under reason for visit, Holly had written toenails. Under tapeworm's reason for visit, I wrote down change oil filter. I figured someone later would see it and then ask Dr. Page if she could check the Jack Russell's oil. I felt tapeworm tugging toward Loretta, and when the two dogs' noses touched, they wagged their tails. Holly said, "See, they can be friends." I said, "That's good." Holly said, "Janie said she's running late. She's back there in surgery. Somebody's dog got shot in the eye. Can you imagine? Janie said it's an emergency. She's going to have to amputate the eye." Holly looked normal and friendly enough. She might have been late 30s and wore hippie clothing that somehow matched a thin cotton lavender skirt, a black and gray tie-dyed sleeveless blouse, those sandals that cost way too much money because they supposedly offer arch support. I didn't think amputate was the correct term for an eyeball, but didn't say anything. Holly wasn't wearing a brassiere. She didn't shave her armpits, which didn't bother me, seeing as the majority of women living on this planet, contrary to popular American Christian belief, didn't shave anywhere, just like most men. Holly had her hair braided 3 times in long pigtails, which made me scared that she might have been one of those second-ready people who had moved into the area, ready in a second for the second coming. I figured a second-ready woman might keep 3 braids in homage to the Trinity. Homage might not be the correct term. For some reason, I said, "I've known one-eyed dogs, and they get around fine. They adapt." I sat down on the bench perpendicular to Holly. Our dogs continued to be friendly. "I'm Holly, and this is Loretta," she said. "Hey, Holly, I'm Edward Johnson. This is Wanda." Who's going to tell a braless woman you got a dog named Tapeworm? Wanda was my ex-wife's name. "I've never seen you here," Holly said. "You look like a level-headed person, and I'm always on the lookout for level-headed people. By level-headed, I mean people who love animals and maybe don't record reality TV shows to watch over and over." I thought about fake speaking in tongues, but the last time I'd done that as a joke, somebody called 911 and said I underwent an epileptic seizure. This happened at a hardware store when an employee told me that if God wanted a nut and bolt to rust together beyond loosening, then I shouldn't interfere with WD-40. I said, "It would be kind of a coincidence if you and I came into a vet clinic at the same time more than once." Holly said, "Ed or Eddie or Edward all the time?" "Edward all the time," I said. I didn't say how Wanda wasn't Wanda all the time. I kind of daydreamed way ahead to Holly calling for Tapeworm, "Wanda, Wanda, Wanda, come here, Wanda," and how I'd have to say how the dog must have lost her hearing. Holly slid over on her bench in my direction. Tapeworm began panting and then jumped up beside me. I looked over to the counter and wondered if Dr. Page no longer had a receptionist, then figured that maybe she needed help in the surgery room. Holly said, "Edward. One time I was with my boyfriend. I don't have a man in my life anymore, maybe because what I'm about to tell you. And I called him Edward out of nowhere, just like in that Led Zeppelin song, you know, about calling out a different guy's name. I didn't even know anyone named Edward back then. Maybe I was having a vision about the future." She smiled. "I have a tattoo of 2 dung beetles going up the back of my thighs. Maybe one day I'll go to Africa and see some real ones." I made a mental note to open my dictionary to the non section when I got home, so maybe I'd finally learn the correct spelling of non sequitur. I said, "I got a tattoo of a chameleon, but it keeps changing colors and blending right in with my skin." Dr. Page, maybe every veterinarian in the world, didn't have much taste or imagination in art. She had gotten a new Norman Rockwell reproduction, her 9th, and it involved a dog and a little boy, just like all the others. If I were a veterinarian, I'd nail Jackson Pollock posters on the wall so people would think, well, at least my dog didn't look that bad after getting hit out on the highway. There were also rows of Hummel-like dog figurines placed in a shallow figurine display case, Dog Fancy and Bark magazine scattered about, and a canine weight guide chart tacked to the door that led into the examination room. examination rooms. The TV remained tuned to Animal Planet. An upright plastic holder housed pamphlets for lost pet medical insurance. "We should go out and get some coffee afterwards," Holly said. "We could drive over to Lorinda's diner. We could sit in the parking lot and let our dogs play together." I had work to do. I said, "Okay." "We should go out and get a drink," she said. Holly looked at her wristwatch. "I'll be in there 5 minutes. How long will it take for Wanda? As long as she's not getting an operation, let's say 15 minutes. And then by the time we get to, say, Gus's place, it'll be 11. That's not too early. Gus lets dogs come inside." Dr. Page came out wearing a surgeon's shower cap. She said, "Hey, Edward. Hey, Tapeworm Johnson." She looked at Holly and said, "Come on back now. Who is this one?" Holly didn't say anything about the Tapeworm Johnson reference. She drug Loretta into the back. I stood up, let go of Tapeworm's leash, and went outside to look in Holly's car. She drove a VW Bug, of course. She left the windows down, which meant, in my mind at least, it was okay for me to look in her backseat floorboard and glove compartment for pharmaceutical evidence in the way of lithium. I found dog hair. I'm no forensic evidence expert, but I felt pretty sure that I discovered wiry white hair, long copper hair, short black hair, short gray hair, long liver-colored hair, and so on. It didn't all come off of Loretta, is what I'm saying. Did I want to spend an afternoon with a crazy dog woman? That was the question. I found Grateful Dead cassette tapes and CDs. At first, I thought I discovered a roach in the ashtray, but upon smelling it, then eating it, I learned that it more than likely ended up being the remnants of a hand-rolled American Spirit cigarette. Did I want to get involved in any way with a woman addicted to the evils of nicotine, like I'd been addicted with cigarettes all the way up until the day after Wanda took off, leaving me alone with Tapeworm? I wanted to find a grocery list, but I didn't find one. I wanted to find a couple books. If she had a copy of Don Quixote, I'd have thought that I'd finally met my soulmate. Even if she had a copy of Wordsworth and that poem about the dandelion. If she had a... I just made that part up. That wasn't in there. I just made that up. That was funny. That was close, though. If she had a number of themselves... Okay, I was going to say something bad about Republicans in a second, so just close your ears if you... Okay. If she had a number of those self-help books or memoirs written by the brainwashed cast of aliens involved in the Bush administration, I'd have known to have brought a wooden stake along with me to the bar. But I found no reading material. Did I want to sit around in a bar with two dogs that might have been as literate as Holly? I got out of the Volkswagen, reached the veterinarian's front door, turned around, rolled the windows up all the way on my pickup, and locked both doors so no one could rifle through my belongings. When I got back inside the waiting room, I found Tapeworm stretched out on her back legs, eating all the dog biscuits in a bowl between the registration ledger and a doorknob used to tether a dog. Tapeworm turned her head, kept her mouth open, and looked at me with bird dog eyes that said nothing but, "You caught me. I'm sorry, but this is who I am." I said, "Bad dog, Wanda." It was a break. Holly came out with Loretta, and right away I noticed not as much clacking on the tile floor. That Dr. Page must be the queen of clipping dog nails, I thought. Holly said to the vet, "I'll see you next week to do the hind nails." "Okie dokie," said Dr. Page. She didn't wear the shower cap anymore. To me, she said, "Come on back, Edward." I said, "I owe you some milk bones." "I'll be at Gus's place. Come on down here. Come on down there, Edward," Holly said. She leaned in and kissed me on the cheek. Who does that? When did women start kissing strangers on the cheek? And she patted Tapeworm on the head. The dog Loretta licked Tapeworm on the muzzle. I tried to say, "I might not be there, seeing as I have some honeysuckle to gather," but I couldn't get it out. I'm no psychologist, but maybe I didn't want Holly to know that I wove baskets for a living. Oh, I can do sweet grass or river cane or white oak or even pine needle baskets, but my best work, and the ones that sell at craft shows and galleries, is honeysuckle vine. I learned how to do it from my father's sister. She spent time in a nut house down in Milledgeville, Georgia. Tapeworm led me into the examination room. Dr. Page kept a frightening poster up on one wall of dog eyeball scenarios like glaucoma in various stages. I didn't like it. On another wall, she kept a poster of a normal dog's alimentary canal above a poster of dog mouths with tooth and gum diseases. I said, tapeworm's fine in all ways except the shots needed. I'd had dreams about Dr. Page, I have to admit. Who has dreams about his veterinarian? I wondered if my dog had veterinarian dreams. I know we always see dogs paddling their paws and whining in their sleep, and we say, hey, the dog's dreaming about chasing rabbits. Maybe they're not. Maybe our dogs dream of running away from veterinarians. I had dreams of Dr. Page wearing, you know, more of a traditional French maid's outfit than the blue pantsuit that she always wore. In one dream, Dr. Page took out a special metal comb and ran it through my hair as I froze on the metal examination table. In another, she announced, heartworm, like that. What a day. God damn, she said to me while checking tapeworm's coat. I wondered how many veterinarians, percentage-wise, weren't Christians and used the Lord's name in vain, as I felt that they should, seeing as too many people abuse God's supposed creatures. I said, it's okay, tapeworm, and lifted her to the table. To the vet, I said, is it really amputate an eyeball? That woman's insane, you know, Dr. Page said. Did you have enough time to talk to her? Did you gather that she's crazy? I shrugged. I shook my head. What? She's absolutely out of her mind. I'm scared of her, to be honest. Bless you. If I could ever find a receptionist again who could be pleasant to people, I'd pay double just to have someone in here with me at all times. What kind of segue did I have to offer? I said, my aunt spent some time in a mental institution in Milledgeville, Georgia. Nowadays, they'd say she was bipolar, but back then, she was known mostly as completely nuts by people in my family. Dr. Page listened to tapeworm's heart and lungs with a stethoscope. She checked her ears and said, I bet your aunt wasn't convinced that government officials try to embed microchips into her. I said, no, not making a connection between Holly and microchips. I thought of my aunt. We used to go visit her in the hospital when I was a kid. She called my father, her brother, Elvis Presley. She tried to strangle my mother one time, screaming out, I am not a vessel for your sticks and stones. I am not a vessel for your sticks and stones. That might have been the last time we visited as a group. My mother called her sister-in-law a basket case over and over to anyone who would listen. I didn't get along very well with my mother. She forever contradicted Dad and belittled him whenever possible, bringing up how no one in my father's family could be trusted, what with the crazy gene. Maybe that's what drove me toward basket weaving, out of meanness, shortly after I graduated college with a degree in journalism, and shortly after my father shoved a garden hose in his muffler and led the business end into the cracked open window of his Buick. I said to Dr. Page, are you kidding me? And tried to make eye contact without imagining her in a French maid's outfit. That wasn't even her dog, Dr. Page said. She goes around picking up strays, getting them shots, then dumps them back out. Or she offers to bring her neighbor's dogs in to get their toenails clipped. And then she gets in here and asks that I scan her body for computer chips she's convinced have been implanted by the FBI. Dr. Page picked up her handheld scanner. I scan the stray to make sure it's not a lost dog, and then I scan Holly. I said, man. I couldn't think of anything else to say, and I knew ahead of time what my next dream would involve with my veterinarian. Dr. Page replaced the scanner and picked up a syringe. This is for rabies and parvo, plus a new strain of canine polio that's going around. At least that's what I heard. It wasn't something that I didn't believe really struck down dogs. Tapeworm didn't flinch, though I held her muzzle shut just in case. Dr. Page said, how old is Tapeworm now? I said, between 12 and 20. What a good dog, she said. Then, in that voice that's used by people who need to live where my father's sister spent most of her adult life, Dr. Page said, who's a good girl? Yes, yes, who's a good girl? That's right, you're a good girl. I cradled my dog and pulled her down to the floor. I said, damn. I meant, damn, you just ruined my respect for you. I said, you ever found a microchip on Holly? My vet laughed. Sometimes I go beep when I'm scanning her just for fun. No, from what I understand, back when you could just park in front of an airport and walk in, even if you weren't flying anywhere, Holly used to walk through the metal detectors. She used to take off her jewelry, you know, and walk through in hopes of setting the thing off. Dr. Page touched my chest. She pushed me out of the examination room in a way to let me know gently that her time with tapeworm was over. I walked back to the waiting room with my dog. Dr. Page took a different turn and ended up on the other side of the counter. She said his tapeworm on heartworm medication. I said, she's inside the house with me. She never gets in a rabid animal situation. I have a privacy fence. Dr. Page said, mosquitoes transmit heartworm, Edward. Mosquitoes can pretty much find ways to buzz over fences. I felt like an idiot, of course. I said, well, then I guess she's not. You need some protection, I promise, especially now, what with the rain. I said, okay. She might have been flirting with me, what with that you need some protection comment. And Dr. Page turned to pick up a year's worth of HeartGuard Plus tablets. She said, shots and checkup come to $100. The heartworm protection's 80. She typed on her computer, let's call it an even 180. I had not spent $180 on my own health care in the previous decade. I said, we need veterinary health care reform. Yeah, Dr. Page said. She said, we need to make sure there's mental health coverage for that new girlfriend of yours, if you ask me, and for other people who've been in my life, I suppose. I thought maybe she made reference to Dr. Leck's accidental overdose of horse tranquilizers. You looking for a partner? I said. I meant, of course, are you looking to bring in another vet here to help you out? Dr. Page said, I'm not a lesbian, Edward. This is bad, sorry. Back in my dreams, I thought. I said, that's not what I meant, and handed over nine $20 bills. That's the thing about basket weavers. We have cash, always. The veterinarian said, have fun with Holly. Hope to see you again one day. I wanted to talk more, but the door opened, and a man came in with a limping, beautiful mutt. I knew the guy. I saw him sometimes talking to himself down at Lorinda's, or I saw him driving slowly with his face dangerously close to the windshield. Dr. Page said, hey, Stet, I told you that guy's going to show up somewhere in the story. What's up? He said, somebody's setting traps around here. There's a break. What should a divorced basket weaver do when tempted by a microchip-believing hippie woman intent on drinking before noon? I said to Tapeworm, you want to go to a bar? Does Tapeworm want to go for a ride to the bar? But I swear to fucking God, I said it all in a normal voice as if I might be talking to a friend from college or my crazy aunt. Tapeworm Johnson said nothing. Tapeworm Johnson sat upright on the truck's bench seat and looked straight out the windshield as good found stray bird dogs are wont to do. I drove down Scenic Highway 11, past my own driveway, and past Looper's Landscape Rock Operation, and past Lorinda's until, finally, I took a couple macadam roads and turned into Gus's place. I tried not to go to this particular bar on the Saluda River very often. One time I showed up there and three men hid behind the counter, saying that someone had a gun. Another time I went in and a homeless drifter insisted that she was one of the premier book critics in the country. For the record, I would rather be in a bar with a possible gun-toter on the loose than a drifter book critic. I remember telling Tapeworm that day, remind me to pay my tab immediately should someone next to me at the bar ever use the term postmodern. I parked next to Holly's VW, the only car in the gravel parking spots. Inside, Gus stood behind the counter, mouth dropped open, staring at Holly. She had leashed Loretta to one of the stools, which Loretta tipped over and dragged behind her in order to sniff my dog's butt. Haven't you ever ordered a scotch and Mr. Pibb? Holly asked me. Gus didn't close his mouth or move his mouth visibly, though his eyes shifted to me. I said, I can't say that I've ever gotten to that point. To Gus, I said, I'll have whatever you have on draft that's not light. Sanity arrives, Gus said. I don't even carry Mr. Pibb. Do they still make it? I got to stop real quick. Where I live, there's a pretty large Hispanic population. There are a lot of these little tons of stores and great taco stands and food trucks and stuff. And there seems to be this kind of famous mango papaya, some kind of drink, and it's spelled J-A-R-R-I-T-O apostrophe S. I would probably call it Jarritos, but I don't speak Spanish. Y'all think I'm about right on that? Jarritos, orange drink, or whatever. Holly scooted a stool a few inches my way and told me to sit down. She said, no, they don't make Mr. Pibb, but I have a stockpile, and I thought maybe you did too. We've been to the vet's. We met at the vet's office. What a romantic story this will be one day. Tell your dog not to drag my stool around, Gus said. I got up, told my own dog to sit. She did, and I righted Loretta's stool and slid it over to the bar counter. To Gus, Holly said, well, then surprise me, but I can't drink beer. It has to be liquor, and it can't be straight. Gus said, you got it. He turned around and stared at his bottles, picked out the vodka, then turned around and stared at his mixers in a cold box. No music played. The walls were bare, though squares and rectangles of a different shade proved that Gus at one time kept something nailed up which, I would bet, weren't Norman Rockwell reproductions. All my dogs used to start barking at 5 o'clock every morning wanting to go outside, Holly said, unless it was raining. If it rained, they all acted as if they didn't need to use the bathroom. So you know what I did? I bought one of those noise machines where you can click on to whales pinging or ocean surf, birds of the Amazon, and rain. I put it on a timer in the kitchen, so it goes off at 4 o'clock every morning until 7. The dogs haven't figured it out yet. They sure don't whine and bark anymore until about 5 minutes after the machine clicks off. How about that? Pretty ingenious, huh? Gus placed a martini glass in front of Holly. He said, vodka and Yaritos. It's some kind of mango soda all the Guatemalans order. Cheers. Holly said, cheers. And I thought about lifting my glass, but I said, that's not your dog. And I pointed at Loretta. Holly downed her poor man's screwdriver as if it were a shooter. She held her chin down to her throat and grimaced. Gus wiped his hands on what might have been the first bar towel ever made. It looked like a nicotine-stained tatter of cheesecloth. He said, I normally wait until noon, and he pulled a can of Schlitz out of the cooler. Holly said, whoo, that went straight through me. Can you watch my dog? I have to pee. I nodded. And then, of course, I went through her pocketbook that she left on the bar. I found a flask, a pack of that rolling tobacco, some papers, and 2 rolls of quarters. She had a skein of uncompromised $2 scratch-off tickets. Holly had some kind of Friend of the World Wildlife Fund membership card and another from PETA. Gus said, do you know her? In a whisper. I said, do you? She's been here before. One time she brought in a snapping turtle, lodged in one of those cat litter boxes with a top that snaps on. Scared the shit out of my customers. That thing kept shooting its head out like a foot-long pecker. I said, the vet says she's nuts. I found no driver's license, social security card, credit card, or passport. Who doesn't have those things outside of people on the lam, children under the age of 15, or illegal aliens who sit around drinking Yaritos mango soda in their spare time? Gus cleared his throat. I understood it to be the international signal for she's coming back out of the restroom. I shuffled everything back into her purse, looked down at the dogs, said, hey, Loretta, and noticed that the dog didn't look up at me. Her name's not Loretta, I thought. Sure she's my dog, Holly said upon her return. It's my dog. Did that bitch Janie Page say I brought in dogs that weren't mine? Why would I do that? She's hated me since I started going there. I'd go somewhere else, but the next vet's something like 30 miles away, you know. She hates me. You wouldn't believe how many women hate me. My ex-wife used to say the same thing. That's what made me so surprised when she left for someone named Michelle, before I learned that it was someone named Michel, a French-Canadian guy who'd come down south in order to write a book on folk artists. Gus said, you want another? If you drink them that fast, I can make you a triple and put it in a regular glass like his. Tapeworm Johnson barked twice for some reason and began panting. She looked at Loretta, then chewed toward the base of her own tail. Holly said, hell, man, if you have a tumbler, I'll take a double triple. I've finished my work for the day. I've done my job for the most part. I couldn't tell if she wanted me to ask what she did for a living or if I was supposed to comprehend that taking someone else's dog to a vet, getting 10 of its toenails clipped, and having her own neck area scanned from microchips constituted a full day's activities. So I was happy when Gus asked, what kind of work is it you got lets you be done before noon? I want that job unless it's third shift. I said, me too, just to be one of the boys. I didn't even want the flexibility of being a basket weaver, to be honest. In another life, I kind of wanted to be an astronaut, seeing as by then they'd have most of the kinks worked out. You know, I do what I do, Holly said. I've been a couple things in corporate America, and then I got out before the bubble burst. Right now, I'm helping some people raise money and awareness toward the plight of the Nepalese. I'm a fundraiser. If I feel like working in the middle of the night, I call potential donors in Japan. I have an altitude training tent that I sleep in and everything, just in case I get a call and need to fly to the Himalayas on short notice. Gus said nothing. I stared at Holly way too long, trying to gather it all in. I said, I've seen those things. It's like what a bubble boy lives in. Hey, what's your last name anyway? Holly said, I'm down to 15% oxygen. On my way to the men's room an hour later, I thought about how Holly might have killed some brain cells. I had seen a documentary one time about some mountain bikers readying themselves for the Leadville 100 out in Colorado. They'd slept in an altitude training tent for 3 months. None of them could tie their shoes or figure out a zipper, much less sing the national anthem or name two rivers east of the Mississippi. They could ride bikes up steep inclines, though. I thought, will it be immoral to have sex with a woman who's only using 15% of her brain? I thought, as bad as corporate America's doing, I'm glad Holly isn't involved with it now, only using 15% oxygen. I thought all kinds of things. I wondered how come I tuned Holly out with all her talk of Sherpas between my first and fifth beer, and obsessed with how Wanda would have said, I told you so, like a mantra, had she entered the bar. I daydreamed about Dr. Page showing up not wearing scrubs and telling me what a good, faithful friend I'd been for Tapeworm. I thought about how I couldn't get so drunk that I got talked into donating a series of honeysuckle vine baskets so the indigenous people of Nepal could carry them atop their heads like indigenous people. I read the graffiti in the men's room and wondered if whoever wrote the jokes in your hand, Stet, referred to the same man Dr. Page greeted in her office as I had left. I came back to the bar proper to find Gus alone. Out the window, I could see Holly's Volkswagen not parked next to my truck. Gus stood leaning over the drink box, wringing his hands with the bar towel. "Where the fuck's my dog?" I said. I walked straight out the door and ran to my truck. Gus followed. I yelled, "Which way did that woman go?" Gus said, "She paid the tab." I yelled out, "Tapeworm, tapeworm, tapeworm," in the hope that she'd merely gone out the door, that she went looking for me. "She took both dogs," Gus said. "She paid the tab and left me a big old tip, and then she said she needed to walk the dogs. I heard her car start up and the door close, but I wasn't thinking." I didn't want to cry in front of Gus. I got in my truck and drove way too fast and impaired away from the direction where I lived. Wanda leaving me was one thing, but losing Tapeworm would have sent me to Gus's place daily. I rolled down the windows and yelled for my dog about every 50 yards. When the road finally came to a four-way stop sign, I pulled over and listened for the remnants of a puttering VW engine. When I called a 911 operator and explained the situation, unstable woman who steals dogs, thinks there's a microchip implanted between her shoulder blades, fundraiser for the impoverished goat herders of Nepal, the man on the other end informed me that it was a felony to misuse the 911 system, but I felt pretty sure it was only a misdemeanor. I made a U-turn, slowed down to see no one parked at the bar, and continued until I got to Dr. Page's vet clinic to see if she had this Holly woman's phone number and address. The lot was empty. I'm not too proud to say that I opened my glove compartment, found some old paper napkins from Captain Del Kell's galley bell, wiped my eyes, and blew my nose. Tapeworm sat in the waiting room alone, the handle of her leash looped around the doorknob attached to the counter. I said, "Goddamn, I'm glad you're here," and bent down to hug my dog. Dr. Page came out of the back. Maybe I blurted out some blubbering sounds. I said, "That Holly woman stole my dog." Dr. Page said, "What are you doing back here?" She reached down and scratched Tapeworm's jowl. "Did you forget something?" I said, "I'm serious. That Holly woman stole Tapeworm when I went to take a leak." My veterinarian shook her head. She looked at me as if I made everything up. Then she walked over to one of the end tables and said, "You really ought to reconsider getting a chip for Tapeworm and some of this lost pet medical insurance." I untethered my dog. Later, I would blame my irrational thought processes either on too many beers in too short a time or from just thinking about an oxygen deprivation tent. I said, I might only be a honeysuckle vine basket weaver who supplies a number of arts and crafts galleries in the South, but I know a scam when I see one. You hire out Holly to pretend to be crazy, then she kidnaps dogs, and you get some kind of kickback from the pet insurance and microchip companies. You can't fool me. You're not going to get this by on me. Dr. Page didn't react one way or the other immediately. In future dreams, I would see her standing in my bedroom, wearing scrubs, acting as serious as a woven trivet. She would shake her head one way, her index finger another in tandem. I would feel guilty as I did standing there with my dog's leash handle in one hand and a pamphlet for the lost pet insurance in the other. I could have walked out indignantly. I could have asked for Dr. Page to forget veterinarian client privileges and give me Holly's address and phone number so I could run her down and seek justice. Instead, I stood there, frozen, my dog wagging her tail, ready to go for another ride, and I wondered if this type of situation finally caused my first vet to overdose. Maybe crazy Holly's like that Christo artist who covers things up, then unveils them anew. Maybe she wanted you to realize what you've taken for granted in a pet, Dr. Page said. I was stunned. How could a woman awash in Norman Rockwell prints understand the avant-garde work of Christo? I asked her if she'd like to meet somewhere, like Gus's bar, when she got off work. I couldn't think of anything else to say, and I knew that no apology would work. Dr. Page said it might be best if I leave. I could not make eye contact. I felt empty, empty. When I asked my dog's veterinarian if she could sell me some horse tranquilizers, I tried to make it come off as a joke. I might have said, corporate America. I might have thought, choke collar. There's that story. Thanks.
Do I do question kind of stuff now? Glenn?
Sure.
Who's got a question? Mary Casey, you got a question?
Yeah, how did you decide on that ending?
I'm not real sure about that ending, too. And I'm not real sure that choke collar. And I think there may have been another sentence in there somewhere that maybe I took off. I said corporate America, and I would hope that he's thinking, screw corporate America if this is some kind of scam. And then he's mentioned that horse tranquilizer, and I'm hoping he's saying, I thought choke collar, like there's got to be something that I can take that'll kill me. Maybe not. Some kind of uplifting kind of ending. Like that. That was a story that I had fun because y'all were laughing. About the time when I got to like when my father put the business end of a hose into the Buick, y'all were like, oh shit, I wonder if I was supposed to be laughing all that other time. Maybe I wasn't supposed to be laughing. That's good.
We read that story last year in Glenn's class.
Really? Oh, I didn't. Oh, I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, I was like, no, I loved hearing it. I was thinking about, like, remember thinking about that ending a whole lot. Like, it was a puzzle, but it was also, it seemed like super appropriate for the voice. It's kind of.
Thanks. That's kind. I'm not real sure about it either. I probably just got tired and went, ugh, it's getting too long. All right, thank y'all so much. Y'all sure have been nice and kind. And your class, you know, I've been to some MFA programs talking, and there's like either rolling eye, not with just me, I mean just with each other or backstabbing and stuff. And y'all are a nice, good, supportive group. And you should all remember that we're all in this together. When one person wins, you all win, especially in a workshop, because you've all worked on everyone's story. So you've helped that make that. It's like, if you all worked on making a great, great cake, and the cake wins a prize, you all get, you know, even though it's in Glenn's name, because he insisted that the cake be in his name. Thank you all.